Hey guys, welcome to episode 3 of This is the Pits with Chelsea and Michael. I'm Chelsea Greenwood.
And I'm Michael Oberst, and we're talking about a double feature, back-to-back, Johnny Suede and Across the Tracks.
I hope you guys tuned in. We have a lot to say.
Yeah, well, they did tune in because they're listening to this now, so. Oh, you mean to the movies. You hope they watch the movies.
I hope you guys watch the movies, and I hope you enjoy listening to this podcast.
Yeah, I think it's a good one because we were able to talk to the director of Across the Tracks, which was kind of cool, Sandy Tung. We called him and asked him some questions personally about it, and he was kind enough to talk about his experience. So that was cool.
This is the first time I wasn't attracted to Brad Pitt, too, in all the movies we've watched.
Yep. Well, he was we'll get into why, but
yeah, enjoy.
I think it's going to be great. Enjoy the episode.
Peace out. Yeah, let's get into the movie. Johnny Suede. How did you feel about it, Michael?
Okay. Here's the thing about Johnny Suede. It is a series of just... It's like... I don't know. I just really don't know what to say about this movie.
I'll tell you something.
Where do you start?
I don't know if I was in a really bad mood when I watched this movie. I don't know if I've seen too many Brad Pitt movies now, but I could not stand it. In a way that I haven't been able to not stand a movie in a really long time. Okay, and I tell you why. Wait, let me explain why I think I couldn't.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand it because I wasn't sure if it was supposed to be satire or if I was supposed to be taking it seriously. And even if it was satire, it wasn't doing a good job of being satirical. It was just sort of like weird.
Yeah.
And I'm usually a huge fan of weird. I hate to say weird in a negative way, but like, yeah.
Weird, like off balance. No, I know what you mean. Like it, I mean, I read some interviews with the director and he said that part of the reason he cast Brad Pitt was because Brad Pitt was the only actor who understood that Johnny Suede is not supposed to be taken 100% seriously.
Right, but then I also read that the director was disappointed eventually in Brad's performance because the audience couldn't tell if he was supposed to be like stupid or couldn't care or like didn't care. He was like laissez-faire or dumb. I couldn't tell. Ultimately, I think he was dumb.
he turned out to be kind of a fuckboy. I don't know. I liked, I liked that Johnny Suede did seem like he was trying, like he was like that person who I feel like everybody has met at some point where you see them and they look the part of something and they have the right mannerisms and stuff, but like you quickly find out like he doesn't actually know where to find the clip and right. He is actually not good at music and he lives in a piece of shit apartment and he's not all that. Like he talks big game and he looks the part, but he's not. And he's kind of a faker. And you know, I think that really is what like a part that I think was interesting was when he met that guy Freak Storm. We see him at the very beginning. Nick Cave, I know. You see Nick Cave at the beginning as Freak Storm, and you like, that guy, Johnny Suede, like he hangs out with guys like that. And then you find out Johnny Suede is actually kind of a phony idiot.
And but then so later is you meet Freak Storm.
Well, but yeah, but then when you first meet Freak Storm, you're like, oh, like Johnny Suede sees him like we first thought Johnny Suede was. Like Johnny Suede sees him and goes, oh, this guy's the real deal. He has a band. And he is. And then later you meet Freak Storm again, and you see him like kind of all fucked up, and you're like, oh, wait, I think Freak Storm's also like Johnny Suede. Like, he's a faker, too.
Yeah. You know what I mean? It's this weird time in Brooklyn where, like, there's, like, this post-punk movement coming on. Yeah, I just couldn't tell if, like, it was supposed to be surreal.
Yeah, for sure.
Or,
it felt surreal.
I mean, it definitely did. I mean, the whole movie. So, I guess, okay, quick synopsis. Johnny Suede. Feeling bad about his shoes. He like
Hold on. To a club. You skipped a very important part.
Yeah.
Oh, no, no, go ahead, go ahead.
Yeah, yeah, he goes to the... So the first scene, you, like, see him, and it's a huge pompadour, which is, like... when I told people I was watching this movie, they were like, oh, yeah, like, the movie with Brad Pitt with the pompadour was, like, on HBO when I was a kid. I've seen it. And I was like, really? I would never have any occasion to see this movie. Anyway, so he's, like, on the subway in New York. He, like, looks down at his, like, gross leather shoes, his pompadour, his shirt. He goes to the club. He sees that guy, Nick Cave, and he, like, sees the most beautiful girl. And it's, like, this great club montage. And he's like, oh, I wish I could be better. Then he walks past a woman being raped.
Okay, yeah, this was or the doing part that I was like...
drugs?
No, she was getting raped.
And some guy says, like, hey, buddy, come in. And, like, she likes it. She likes it. And then he didn't... Then he thought about maybe doing it, but then didn't and walked right past. And then... Oh, no, he went to the phone booth to call the police.
Yeah, he went to the phone booth to call the police. He said, hey, there's something funny going on. And then the shoes fall out of the sky and land on the phone booth and destroy the phone booth. And he's like, okay, this is the part where the movie sort of, I was like, okay, what the fuck is going to happen?
Yes.
Because these shoes fall out of the sky, land on the phone booth, destroy it completely. He gets the shoes and he forgets about the rape. And he's like, wait a minute, look at these shoes though. These things are popping, and he just takes the shoes and then, like, wait, like, why did there have to be, I just don't get why there had to be a rape.
Right? I feel like so far in
our... We need a reason for him to...
Maybe that was just an early 90s thing. Maybe that was a part of the conversation that was going around in the 90s, because I feel like we've said that before. Like, why does there have to be blah in this movie? I want to know what the director was thinking with that. Maybe to try to illustrate the kind of neighborhood he was in, the kind of people that he was hanging with. Also to say that, like, he wasn't man enough to stop the rape himself, maybe.
Yes, that's one interesting thing, is that he's not man enough to stop the rape. He's also, like, he was kind of, like, he seemed like he was kind of scared.
Yeah, like, and then he, like, hesitated, he couldn't tell. I think that the personality who Johnny Suede thinks he is would be the kind of guy to stop something like that, but the kind of guy that Johnny Suede actually is wouldn't.
Also, what was his name before he got the suede shoes?
I don't remember.
Johnny Leather?
It was like Johnny Rogowski or something.
Smith.
Yeah. Jonathan Smith. But yeah, okay, so the shoes drop down from out of nowhere, and then I'm like, okay, this is a surrealist movie. I can get down with this because it makes no sense. He takes the shoes home. He becomes Johnny Suede. He, like, is obsessed with these shoes in a way that is creepy. He, like, brushes it with a toothbrush.
Toothbrush. It's really weird. It's, like, kind of like, it's a little bit like David Fincher. Like,
yeah.
Really just weird, like... I don't know, strange.
Yeah, there is a very David Fincher vibe to this movie, and there's also, I think, a very what's his name, David Lynch. There's a couple of, like, pretty Lynchian moments.
Oh, so David Lynch. Yeah, yeah. Like Blue Velvet. Yeah, like
maybe,
yeah, for sure.
Maybe this is like Blue Suede.
Kind of
maybe
Eraserhead.
Yeah, that comes later. But yeah, so then I was like, okay, so if this is going to get weird like that, I'm totally down. But then, again, it didn't quite hit the mark for me.
No, it did not. Okay, I want to also point out, like, this movie made me realize that watching all of Brad Pitt's movies is losing its charm.
I feel the exact same way, and I have to say, this is the most interesting takeaway for me, is that I didn't find him to be attractive at all. 0%. Except for when he was walking around naked with his hand in his pants. When he is Johnny Suede, clothed. Oh my god, especially when he's in bed with Catherine Keener, who, by the way, I fucking love. She's the best.
I love Catherine Keener, and I love that Samuel L. Jackson had a little part
in this,
too.
I know! I wrote that.
So random.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I didn't find him, I was not like, that hair didn't do it for me, his acting didn't do it for me. I was just like... I'm annoyed. And I hope...
I disagree with you, actually, because I thought it was a pretty good acting performance. I thought he was really playing the part of... I mean, he wasn't, like, hot, but he was, like, kind of playing the part of, like, the cute, young, adolescent, like, 19, 20-year-old who was trying to find his way in a world where nobody understood him, and he was, like, stuck in the, like, you know, 50s or whatever, when the rest of the world was actually
sure.
The 80s.
I think he did. I didn't mean to say his acting wasn't good. I think that character, like, he played a character that I didn't like successfully.
Yeah.
I really didn't like Johnny Suede as a person. I think maybe because I've known a lot of Johnny Suedes growing up in LA, people who are like fakers, you know, but are good looking.
Yeah.
But I'm like, why does Catherine Keener like him so much? She fucking loves him.
She said she loves him a little
quick.
Yeah,
and I
honestly
think it's because he is really successful at being a pretend person.
Yeah. She is so much better than him.
Shockingly so.
Like, as a person.
Shockingly so. In fact, she's the opposite of him. She, like, gives to mentally handicapped people. She, like, is a genuine human who is probably blinded by the way he looks. I mean, what else does he have to offer her? He can't even fucking make her come.
No, he can't. I mean, she's, I don't know what she, like, maybe she's, like, kind of a cougar? You know? Maybe. Because she's not cougar, because she had to be at least, like, 30 in that movie. She was definitely older than him. I don't know if they were trying to play her like she's, like, supposed to be his age, but she looked a little older than him. And I think that might have been part of it.
I was thinking that maybe he's kind of mentally challenged, because he's so out of it that maybe she's, like, into him. Maybe that's, like, that's why she has her job. Maybe, like
the
we
caretaking
really think about
thing.
It. Yeah, maybe she's just like, I am a caretaker. That's what I do.
Maybe she gets
and, like,
off
maybe
a little
she's
bit
a little
on...
Exactly. And she's like, he's, like, so dumb. I get to take care of him. But he's really attractive.
Well, if that's the case, then she shouldn't get so mad at him and throw shit at him if he's going to do things that are really dumb, like cheat on her.
Disagree. Hard disagree.
Really? You think that – not to say that people who are slower have no morals, but
I
just think that
– I don't think this is something she sees. I don't think she's like, oh, he's dumb, I'm going to take him in. I think she genuinely loves him. I think she just has like a, it's like a Freudian thing. It's like not
you know
something
what,
that
though?
She's cognizant of. No, you
though?
Do not forgive someone for randomly fucking someone on a train.
No, she shouldn't
that's
forgive
a pattern
him,
that
but she shouldn't get so mad at him.
She's heartbroken, Michael, you callous bastard.
No, she is heartbroken, but it's like, well, if you really genuinely think that he is, like, mentally slower, like, has a predisposition to not be able to comprehend.
I don't think she does. I think she's blinded by his act. I think she believes his act.
If that's the
unlike
case, then
us,
yeah.
The viewers.
If that's the case, then yeah, she has every right to be mad. But I'm saying if it's that she thinks that he is a little bit slow and she is sort of embracing the caretaker role, then it's not fair for her to get that mad. Because it's like, well, you know, you wanted to be his caretaker, and sometimes people who are slow make mistakes. I don't know. Maybe that's the most insensitive thing I've ever said.
No, I don't think that she thinks he's slow.
Okay.
I think she's put blinders on because she wants love so badly. And I have to say, as an early 30s woman, I know so many girls who are just like, he's good looking, he likes me, I'll fucking take it. Like, I'm just going to date for the sake of dating, even though he's such a clear fuckboy. You know, I'd like to hear the conversation she has with her girlfriends. You know, like, he couldn't find my clit. It's like, hello, red fucking flag.
Yeah, true.
You know?
True, yeah, that's probably more so it.
So I thought that was interesting. But then there's also the whole first relationship he has.
Yeah, that one's – I hated that. I could not get through that fast enough.
Yeah, I kept looking at the ticker at the bottom of the screen, being like,
me too.
Okay, I'm 18 minutes in.
It felt like work.
Yeah.
Well, it's because it's really slow paced and it's really like picturesque, you know, mm-hmm. like the scene when they're in the bathtub. It's like very about the images.
Yeah.
And like the image, it has good imagery, but like the story just moves so slow and the characters are just not very likable.
Right, and the story isn't interesting. I mean, like, I get Well, that's the thing. Like, I get the character itself. Like, the intention is and has the potential to be very interesting, but the story itself isn't interesting. Like, guy wants to be famous, meets a girl, she scorns him. Then he meets another girl who doesn't scorn him. He didn't learn his lesson. The end. Like, at some point he pulls a gun.
That's true,
It could have
yeah.
taken some interesting turns that it really didn't. What I thought was interesting, I was reading the trivia facts about this movie,
Yeah.
and well, just to a point that you said a second ago about how like all the shots are like sceney and you're like supposed to be in it. The director and the writer, Tom DiCilio, I think his name is, he was
Think it's the cello.
DiCello. Yeah, he was basically he fired the DP after the first footage was shot, and
Oh,
then
really?
basically like took it on his own. And he claims, the director claims, he confessed that the original DP confessed to deliberately sabotaging the film due to jealousy, which I think tells a lot about the kind of guy who's making this movie. He's a very like in it for me kind of director, it seems.
Yeah, no, completely. I
And you can
mean,
see that in the script, and you can see that in the way that the movie's made. It's like very like self-aggrandizing to the director.
yeah, and also, he auditioned, he said that he auditioned 500 guys for the part of Johnny Suede.
Right, which is insane. And then he
Fucking
said,
absurd.
absurd. Like, it just is a little bit crazy. It reminds me of The Room a bit, this character, Tom. He said he insisted on casting the relatively unknown Brad Pitt over the objections of the producer who wanted to consider Timothy Hutton. He was ultimately dissatisfied with Brad Pitt's portrayal of Johnny as being slow or stupid instead of just childish. Which I picked up on the slow and stupid thing, like,
Yeah.
a lot, big time.
Yeah, but also all right. Here's what, did you see the blog post that Tom made about this movie?
No.
Yeah, Tom DiCello on his website made a blog post about this movie and he gives a lot of details. But like he didn't say that, like what you just said about being dissatisfied. He said so it's kind of stupid. He said, "Call me an idiot if you want, but I was certain of two things the moment he walked in. One, he was Johnny. Two, he was going to be a star. He did his audition without me saying a word to him, and without me saying a word to him, he understood that beneath his posturing exterior, Johnny was really a lost soul, someone who had no idea who he really was. This led Brad to a brave acting choice, to bring a hesitant vulnerability to the character, something no one else had been able to do, even without my prompting."
Okay, I would say yes, there is a vulnerable side to Brad's acting. I agree with that. But when was the blog post written? What year? Pre or post fame?
Post
Because he
fame.
seems like the kind of guy who'd be like, oh, of course I knew, I always knew. As opposed to originally being like,
Oh,
nothing
yeah.
would be perfect for me. I mean, he fired the DP and tried and went through 500 different people for this role. It seems like he's the kind of guy that was like, oh, yeah, of course. Later, I know. I mean, maybe I'm.
Yeah, he talks all about it. And he like constantly references the fact that Harvey Weinstein, garbage person of the year, Harvey Weinstein said, "Oh, I love that movie," talking about Johnny Suede. He said, "I love that movie. And I didn't discover Brad Pitt. Tom DiCello did."
Okay, so apparently, this movie, because I looked it up after it was over because I really didn't like it. Which I'm glad. This is the first movie that I like. We've watched some like slogs, but I mean they were fine, all the movies we've watched.
Yeah.
This one I
Right.
genuinely didn't like it. And again, I could have just been in a bad mood, but anyway, I went to go research like how it was received.
Yeah.
So the film was entered into competition at the Locarno International Film Festival in Switzerland, where it was seen by Mark Tusk from Miramax. Who, convinced Pitt would become a film star, urged Harvey Weinstein to make the unprecedented step of purchasing the rights to the film he had not yet seen. So the rights to the film were bought based on Brad Pitt outside of the movie at all. Johnny Suede won Best Picture at the festival,
Crazy.
and the distribution deal was sealed. I mean, Best Picture of anything, I'm sorry. Even if I'm missing something and I'm like way off the mark here, Best Picture, I don't know. Anyway, the movie grossed $90,000. Against a production budget of $500,000. Yeepsies.
Yikes.
Yeah, and the
Not
and
great.
right, and they had
Harvey Weinstein, not happy with that investment.
no, but Brad Pitt. I think
But Brad Pitt.
right after this was Thelma and Louise, no?
Actually, no. So Thelma and Louise was filmed before
You're
this,
right.
but it hadn't come out yet.
Okay. You're right.
Because he said when he came in for the audition, he only had two things on his resume, and it was like Thelma and Louise and some TV thing. And which is interesting that he did not put Too Young to Die, or maybe Too Young to Die hadn't come out yet. But so this movie, since it's an indie movie, and like we're watching it in credit order, like in the order that it's credited to Brad
Yeah.
Pitt, its official release was 1992, like its theatrical release was 1992, but it showed at the Locarno International Film Festival in 1991, and it was filmed in 1989. So like, and the last award that it got, it was nominated for an Indie Spirit Award in 1993. So like, this movie
Jumps through
has like
time.
a 5 year, yeah, it's got a long
It
timeline.
occurs to me that I haven't covered any of the years and what's going on in the year, but that's just, it's pretty much the same
We'll
as the last two.
circle back.
Yeah.
We'll circle back.
I thought that, yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else to say other than the hair. You
Okay.
kind of have a Johnny Suede
Yeah.
thing going on.
I know.
You do.
I was gonna be like, you know what? I liked his
Obviously,
hair.
because you have, for people who don't know who Michael Oberst is, he does have like a miniature pompadour.
I have a small
But
pompadour.
you
I mean,
don't but you wear it in earnest. You don't wear it because you've seen other people wear it and you want to be this like rockabilly kid.
I wear it because I have a large forehead and because I'm not sure if my hairline is receding or not.
It's definitely
And so
not.
I just do pompadour because I'm like, well, I just know it's a winning formula. I'm just gonna go with that. And it's not a big pompadour. It's not Johnny
No,
Suede.
it's a
But I gotta
mild
say, I
pompadour.
think it's. Sorry, could you hear that fire
Yeah,
truck?
but it's fine.
You know, it's not a large pompadour, but it's just like Johnny Suede. I'm impressed that he was able to do it, and I kind of liked it. Like, I think it says a lot about his character to have a pompadour that ridiculously
Well,
large.
I think it
You know, like he's so
totally.
ridiculous.
It's like it's a very like immature way of thinking. It's like I'm gonna idolize somebody. And so that I'm going to do what he does, I'm going to do it to the extreme so that it's even more convincing. It's a very like juvenile way of thinking, which is good for this character because he does because like that's all the takeaway for me is like ultimately if he's not stupid, then he's just extremely juvenile. And he lives in this fantasy world. And I think the fantasy world comes out a lot in his dreams. There's a few dream sequences. That's where the Lynch stuff comes in.
Yeah, the dream sequences, I don't know. You know what else is kind of weird? You know what else is kind of weird? That this movie showed at Sundance and it was nominated for the Grand Jury Prize.
Yeah, okay. So maybe this is just like the time in the world where like weird shit isn't made, and so they're like, whoa, this is weird, so it must be cool.
Yeah, well, you know what won the Grand Jury Prize that year is Paris is Burning.
Oh, fuck, I love that movie.
Yeah, this movie, Johnny Suede did not have a chance against Paris is Burning.
No, that's an
But
epic fucking game changer, that movie.
yeah, but I gotta say, 1991 or 92, sorry, 1992, when this had its theatrical release, was not a super strong year for movies. It was an okay year. The number one movie for the whole year was Aladdin, which is
Well,
not a, I mean, it's problematic, but
it's
it's not like when it came out, it wasn't like a bad movie.
okay, it's not problematic. It's the best movie ever made. And I stand by that.
You have a problem with Disney
Yes,
movies,
I
and we're
do.
going to have to talk about
Yes,
this.
I do. I love everyone except for fucking Frozen.
Okay, got it. Copy that.
Okay, so that's 1992. No, wait, the Oscars. Okay, I see, for the year of 1992. So the year it was released was 1991. The Oscars that year were in 1992. That was Silence of the Lambs that won the best movie.
Silence of the Lambs won in 1992.
Yes, for the 1991 year of film. So
Oh, well,
technically
what
we're looking at
won?
the 1993.
Who won the Oscar for 1992? Because Unforgiven was made that year. That was the number one movie.
Unforgiven won. Yeah, Best Picture. Clint Eastwood. Unforgiven. Yeah. Never seen it.
See, no, I never wanted to. It doesn't seem like it's that. I mean, I wonder if anyone's like, Unforgiven is the best movie of all time.
100%. Here's the thing. It's going to be really interesting to see if anyone listens to this. We've already lied.
Period.
We've already...
Just full stop.
But also, we've already said so many false things. I'd like to call it back to the Furby moment from last week.
Yeah.
Furbies don't come out until 1998. Correct. I don't know why I thought they came out in 1991.
Well, that's why I was like, okay, well, Furbies were supposed to be a fad, but like they were on top of the game for 10 years because I wasn't alive in 1991, and I have... memories when I was like a kid of having a Furby, so that would mean that they were around for,
no,
but they weren't around for that.
The website I was getting my information from had a picture of a Furby, and so I just assumed that it was corresponding to the year. But so for all of our listeners out there, if you care, I'm sorry. Obviously, I was wrong.
Sorry about the Furby thing. Okay. All right. Well, I'm glad we got that out of the way.
Well,
thanks for clearing
that. I've been waking up in the middle of the night, even though no one's heard this yet, knowing that I've lied to my public.
Okay, here's a funny thing that happened during the filming of Johnny Suede. Did you read about this? The fact that his entire wardrobe got stolen?
And that it was his. It was Tom DiCilio's wardrobe. It was his clothes.
Yeah, he donated all of his clothes to the production, and then it got the whole thing got stolen. And whoever stole it liked the clothes because they kept them. And oh my God. I just working in production and imagining like the AD, it says that the assistant director came up running and crying and said, someone left the wardrobe unattended and all the costumes have been stolen.
Oh my God.
Is like the kind of thing that I wake up in the middle of the night, like right before a shoot. You know how like right before a shoot, you have all these fears?
Yeah.
Like the day before.
Yeah.
That's the sort of shit that I worry about. Anyway, it says a day later, they found the guys who'd stolen them.
Oh, good for them.
Well, the relief was short lived because the police then informed them that the thieves liked the clothes so much that they refused to return them, which I didn't know that was an option.
It's not a fucking option.
I didn't know that the thieves could be like, yeah, we stole them, but we like them and we're not giving them back. And the cops advised that if we wanted to continue shooting in Williamsburg, that we should accept those terms. It's like, wait, what?
Wait.
So like,
how long into shooting was this? Does it say?
It's a good question.
Because like...
It didn't say. I don't know. But they faked all of Johnny's wardrobe from then on.
Oh my gosh, that's really funny. I think it also says a lot about the director that he put his own clothes. I mean, it's almost like he made a movie about himself. And then was like...
Well, someone did ask them, like, is this biographical? And he said, well, partially, but not... I mean, not everything, but like just, you know, partially. Partially enough that he has the same clothes as him.
Partially enough that he for sure didn't know where the clitoris was either. He seems like that kind of a guy.
Yeah, I don't really know, and I may never know, and I'm completely fine with that.
Yeah, well, listen, you don't have to know. You have no occasion to come into contact.
No, but I can find a
bee hole. That'd be really,
know where that one
is. Would be really terrible if you couldn't.
I know. Can you imagine?
I don't think you'd be capable of having this conversation if you couldn't find that.
I know. Well, I need an older man to teach me where the bee hole is.
Yeah. Oh God, that moment when they're lying in bed and like she's like my
turn. And he's like, I'm gonna go grab some meatloaf if you don't mind. And she's all, wait a minute, it's my turn. And he's like, oh.
Yeah, good for you, Yvonne. Honestly. Women
I know.
Have to fucking do these things for themselves. I was glad to know that she asked, and then he just sits there and you can tell that she's not feeling anything, and I was just like looking at the clicker at the bottom of the screen being like, okay, 38 minutes and we have an hour to go.
Oh my God. Yeah, why did this movie feel like such work? This whole thing is, okay, I was thinking about this while I was watching this movie, that after a while, I think that maybe Brad Pitt's like charm, the crazy hotness about him, it might wear off and we might just be watching this actor and like it might become really clinical and like a real study.
So I'm glad you say that, because I felt that exact same way when the movie ended, but I think actually it speaks to his acting career. I don't think that's going to happen. I think this character in particular, who the character is like repulsive to a person who is comfortable in their skin or is grown up. So it's hard to watch him because he's so unlikable.
Yeah, testament to his acting job though. Like that was, I think he did a good job acting.
Assuming he acted the way he was supposed, assuming he was supposed to come across the way he did, which we have conflicting reports on,
It's true.
assuming he like nailed the sort of dumb and immature thing, like, yeah, 100%. If he was trying to be cool, he didn't come off as cool.
You know what though? It's like the, I don't know. I have this opinion that if, like, at a certain point, the director can say, no, this is not what I wanted from my actor. And it doesn't matter whether or not that's what the director wanted from the actor. The actor gave a performance, and whether or not the director liked it is irrelevant. It's what the actor did that is should be the only measure of how good it was. You know what
Totally.
I
Well,
mean?
totally. So that's what I'm trying to say is that, like, I didn't like him. He did a good job of me not liking him, more so than in Too Young to Die, where he's like a fucking asshole, straight up asshole, drug addict.
And he looks so different.
He looks so different every time. He's much more baby-faced in this one,
It's
obviously.
crazy. And also, and I mean, I know we're not talking about Across the Tracks right now, but in Across the Tracks too, he looks like a little twink. Like it's crazy how much like he can control his body like that.
He plays such a teenage boy. I'm excited to talk about it Across the Tracks with you later on in this episode. But let's finish Johnny Suede because we had to slog through that movie. We're going to slog through this podcast.
Yeah, I mean, go
Oh,
ahead.
yeah, no, just about the director and whether or not he did a good acting job. I think it was. I think I know that he did a good acting job because I wasn't attracted to him. Like, he's the kind of antithesis of what I'm looking for in a man as a grown woman living in Brooklyn,
Yeah, and you know, it's like I sent you that video of that interview that he did at the premiere of Johnny
Yes, I was
Suede.
just gonna say that too. Thank you for reminding me.
It's interesting because it seemed like he maybe didn't love the movie either. Like he wasn't that excited about it, or maybe he was just in a weird mood in that moment. But like his interview, like he just didn't seem that excited about it. Like,
I
you know what I
think
mean?
that he was a young buck who didn't know how to perform for the camera unless he was performing for the camera. I didn't think he had honed a personality yet, and so he was that little boy from Missouri in that interview. I think he was just like acting himself because he also came off kind of like a little bit dumb and ungrateful. But the interesting thing about that interview, talking about what you just said about the director, is that when the interviewer was like, "What was your favorite part about the movie?" He said, "Working with Tom. He was my favorite. I'd love to work with him again. He's
True.
sharp."
True.
Yeah.
He did say that.
And he said the script was amazing. How could I deny that amazing script? And I just said, hard eye roll. Did not like the
Yeah.
script.
I don't know. I thought this movie was kind of interesting. I mean, it feels like a movie that I would watch in film school, that I would be forced to watch.
It
You know, I would
feels
never pick this movie.
Like the kind of movie that was intended to be watched in film school but didn't quite pull it off. Do you know what I
Okay,
mean?
stop banging on the counter. Yes, stop banging on the counter
Oh, do
now.
you hear that really loudly? Sorry. It
It's really loud.
feels like the kind of movie that was intended to be watched, to like be made to be watched in film school. Like it had that like, I'm gonna make a fucking movie that's gonna break barriers. And it for me,
That artsy.
yeah, didn't quite hit that nail on its head. Like, but maybe.
Like maybe he was trying to be David Lynch and it just sort of, I don't know. I don't think he was trying to be David Lynch. I think he was trying to tell the story of a young guy who is a tryhard who doesn't know what he wants and is just lost and confused and trying to find himself. And I think if that's the story he was trying to tell, then he told it. It just was really boring.
Well, and now that we're talking about it, I just don't know. If at the time, like if we're jaded, like if at the time it came out, it was kind of awesome and weird, and like in a good way.
Maybe. I don't know. Is that what they liked in 1991? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I remember reading a thing about when Pulp Fiction came out in 1994 or 1983 at Sundance, and how Sundance had in the last few years become this sort of place for like sleepy art movies. That's what it said in this thing I read about Pulp Fiction, and Pulp Fiction sort of flipped that on its head. But
totally,
I wonder if maybe for some like Sundance, like it's not the Sundance we know today, and it was like it was a place for sleepy art movies like this, where this is not really a, you know, a crazy exciting movie, and it's not supposed to be. It's just this like introspective kind of weird thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe Twin Peaks came out that year, 1990 to 1991. Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, the movie, came out in 1992. So it was, for me, I feel like he's seeing something that's getting reception and is like, I'm going to kind of make something along those lines. I am cynical about this bastard, Tom. I don't like his intentions in filmmaking.
Look, Tom, got to be real with you. I don't like you.
I don't like you. And I don't like the character of Johnny Suede. I think Brad Pitt did a good job.
Okay, so let's talk about Brad Pitt then. Let's talk about after, like, what do you think this movie did for, like, him?
Well, it's his first starring role in a movie. Like, he carries the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that, if anything, this movie shows that he can carry the whole movie.
Right. I think in terms of the Brad Pitt's career, this is a huge one because you're right. He carries the whole thing. Regardless of whether or not the movie's good, he is the star, undeniably. He's not supporting.
He's the star, yeah. And I think that it might have been a little under, like, he might have played it a little too softly. No, maybe not. I don't know. Maybe it was just misdirected or misguided. His performance was misguided or something. But like, he did a good job. I think he did a good job of playing this like dumb kid who was insecure. And like, if you put this movie next to Thelma and Louise, and you're looking to cast Brad Pitt, and you see this and Thelma and Louise, then you'd be like, this guy is versatile.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And he can carry a movie.
Yeah, he can carry a movie, and...
And he's good in his underwear. Like, really good.
He's walking around with his hands in his pants a couple of times. His body's, like, fucking perfect in every way.
I had a hole in his underwear, and I was trying to look inside of it.
To find that b-hole.
Yeah. It seemed like it might have been a little bit high to be his b-hole, but I was just going to check anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I was comforted to know that I wasn't attractive to Brad Pitt, and I was happy when I was thinking about this podcast that we were going to talk about how fucking hot he is, because we don't have to.
Yeah, I know. That it does get a little old. Is like, but I think, I'm wondering, like, by the time we get to, you know, Inglourious Bastards, are we going to be like,
Brad Pitt. We know that face. I'm a little bit already like that, but I think I'm just really didn't like Johnny Suede.
I think we also had to watch two movies.
That's
in a
right.
Week, which,
well, I already talked about 1991, so our normal sequence of events can be replaced by our second film this week, Across the Tracks.
Okay, so you know what? I'm not finding any interesting news items. I should have done this research before. So we're just going to go ahead and oh, you know who was born?
Oh my God,
Kyle Massey.
I'm going to kill you.
There we go. That's it. Kyle Massey from Corey in the House, and also That's So Raven. He was born in August of 1991.
Nobody cares about him.
There's your fun fact.
Not a good fact.
Someone does. Someone is not, like I said, not a lot of good things, not a lot of interesting things happen in August 1991.
Okay.
So we're going to go ahead and skip that.
I would like to do a brief musical interlude before we rate Johnny Suede to hear his song from the movie, sung by Brad Pitt, called I Want to Work in Midtown. Enjoy.
I want to work in Midtown, wear a three-piece suit. I want to hire a limo just to hear my driver toot.
Welcome back.
We didn't even talk about his music, but I didn't hate it. I mean, it's kind of funny seeing him do it, but like, it's kind of, I don't know. I didn't hate it.
No, I think it got better. No, I didn't hate it. I thought it got better. The first song he played on his, like, acoustically on his electric guitar, I was like, oh fuck, like we're in for some shit. Then I was like, oh, this is just a kid like writing songs, and I was into it. And then I found the song on Spotify today, and I was like, actually, I'm into it. And I liked his, like, cute little... He does have a, like, nice singing voice, actually. Brad does.
Yeah. It's not terrible. The lyrics aren't great, but the song isn't all that bad. Also, though, it's funny, that thing you sent me on Spotify with the whole song, it's, like, a bunch of celebrities doing a song for, like, charity, and Juliette Lewis also did one, and it's also not... It's, like, really weird. It's actually just straight up bad.
They're still dating at this point, right?
They're, yeah, they are. They're still dating.
Oh my gosh, so interesting. Okay, let's do our ratings so that we can get to our second feature film this week.
Okay. All right, well, how do you rate... Let's start with his hair. How do you rate his hair?
Here's the thing. His hair is a defining characteristic of the movie. I have to give him a 10 for it. I don't find it to be sexually attractive.
No, I'm going to give it a 10 too, because I'm giving it a 10 because of the fact that it's so extreme, and I think he's pulling it off. Like, it's not attractive, but he makes it, he like works it, and like, it doesn't look awkward on him. Like, he looks comfortable in it, which is why I'm giving him a 10, because he can rock it.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even know how to rate the hair on this one, because it is, because it's a part of the costume. So yeah, I'm going to give it a 10 because of its integrity. Really stayed together until the very end. And then finally I found him to be attractive at the very end when he was like disheveled. And I was like, there's the Brad Pitt I know.
And his hair was down.
Yeah. And I was like,
there's Brad.
I was like, there's really my Bradley. Baby boy. I missed you, honey. acting.
Okay. I'm giving him an 8. Or no, I'm going to give him a 7. I'll give him a 7.
I think I'm going to give him a 6. I just can't tell. I'm like grouchy about this movie. I'm not given anything. Really, I'm not given anything above a 7 across the board, except for the hair.
I'm giving him a 7 because I think that he showed he had acting chops in this movie, which I think was impressive. For such a young guy with like so little experience, I think he did a good job. So I'm giving him a 7.
Yeah, I think you're right. I agree with what you're saying. I would add too, like, it is important that he carried the whole film by himself. Even though it was slow as fucking fuck, as a duck sucking a truck. So that concludes Johnny Suede, but we've got...
No, you have to. We have to rate the movie itself.
Oh, the movie. Well, don't make me sing. I'm gonna give it a 2.5.
2.5.
I'm gonna give that half for intention, and for Brad. But yeah, I mean, I would never suggest anybody watch it, and I'd never watch it again. And I'm like, kind of, yeah, 2.5. I didn't like it. I thought I liked the message. Like, I get logically what the message was, and I'm like, stand behind it. I wasn't entertained by it at all. And movies are supposed to be entertaining, right?
They are. Yeah, they are.
I'm sorry, listeners, that I'm such an asshole, but you've got to get to know this side of me.
Here's the thing. This movie was maybe not for viewers. It might have been a movie that the director wanted to make to tell a story that he felt he needed to tell.
Exactly. And I hate that. The director is just so... the director's ego is so fucking all over this movie that I just can't get behind it.
Yeah, that's definitely takes it down a few pegs for me, too. I mean, I'm giving it a 4 out of 10 because... I did kind of like – I liked how pretty it looked. That bathtub scene where they're shaving each other is actually really cute. And
I've seen it before, and I've seen it better.
Well, he did a pretty good job of it, and I liked the scene. I don't know. It was kind of cute in its own way, and I sort of liked the juxtaposition of ooh, big word there. Watch out. of Johnny Suede next to when he was next to Freak Storm.
Yeah.
I kind of like those two, that sort of seeing those two together. So I'll give it a 4, but definitely don't want to watch it again. And I'd only recommend it to somebody who's really about artsy film, real film movies.
No, but I see that bugs me. I don't think this is a real fucking film movie. There's so many better real artsy film movies.
This movie. Okay, here. All right. This is it. This movie is Johnny Suede of art movies.
Okay. All right, Michael, getting deep. I'm into it. Totally. It's trying to be. It's posturing.
It looks and sounds, yes, it looks and sounds like an art movie, but then when you really get into it, it's not.
Exactly. And that drives me crazy because I love an art movie. I would say visually, I really liked all the blues that they used. I loved his room, and the subway was all blue, and the Brooklyn was kind of bluey. I was into it.
All right, we get it. You like blue.
Only in this movie. I don't know. I'm just trying to find something. But
you don't have to. No, I think, you know what? You don't have to find a good thing to say.
I think your point is correct. But we got to wrap up Johnny Suede so we can get to Across the Tracks.
Yeah, we really need. There's a lot to talk about here with Across the Tracks. So that's it for Johnny Suede. We're going to take a quick little interlude and then get right into Across the Tracks.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So here's another snippet from the same song, I Want to Work in Midtown. As performed by Bradley Pitt.
I wanna meet a model who's only got one name. She'll take me out to parties and treat me to champagne. I wanna make her love me just like you used to do. Cause when I have these things I want, then I won't want you.
Okay, welcome back, guys.
Yeah.
Michael, let's talk about Across the Tracks from 1990.
Yeah, it's about time we talk about Across the Tracks. This is a pretty straightforward indie movie, which is kind of cool. I thought that was kind of cool about it. That it's a 90s indie movie, and it probably would have maybe would have got lost forever just in the fold of the 90s if it weren't for Brad Pitt. You know what I mean?
Well, I think it did get lost forever, and we dredged it out for this podcast.
That's true. Even with Brad Pitt.
We took it out and dusted it off. Blew the cobwebs off of it.
Yeah, it's true.
I enjoyed watching it. There's not really much to talk about. It was a fine film that was made.
Mm-hmm.
So the movie stars Rick Schroeder of NYPD Blue fame. He's really famous at this time in the 90s. Brad Pitt is still completely obsolete. Nobody knows who he is.
He wasn't even, we found this out later because we did actually for this interview, the director of the movie, Sandy Tung. We just asked him some questions about it and unfortunately didn't get good audio of that, so you'll just have to take our word for it.
Yeah.
But when we talked to him, he mentioned that it was shot before a lot of the stuff that we've already done before Johnny Suede, before Too Young to Die. So this is, it's just that since it was an indie movie, it took so long to get out, but it was shot before a lot of stuff. It just came out later.
Yeah, I think it was shot in 1987, and it came out in 1990.
Right. Or something like that.
Yeah. So the storyline is two brothers. One is an all-star track star who's goody-goody, two shoes. They have a single mother. Their father left them when they were kids. We've come to find out that their father was an alcoholic, and Rick Schroeder, the younger brother, is a bad boy who goes to prison early on in the movie, or he goes to juvie early on in the movie for stealing a car, and he's bad, and Brad Pitt's the good one, and Brad Pitt when he gets released from juvie, takes Rick Schroeder under his arm and says, like, why don't you run track? It'll, like, clean you up. It'll make you a good guy again. And then Rick Schroeder becomes a better track star.
Yeah.
And it exposes Brad's inner demons of alcoholism and his perfectionism. And it's pretty deep. I mean, it's a pretty, like, it's a common thing, the competitiveness between siblings.
Yeah, but I think deep is a bit of a stretch.
Okay, so the concept is good. The movie could have been really good if it was done.
I was just going to say it's not so 90s. Like, it's just so, it's hard to focus on the story at all because it's like the beginning, that intro scene where they're stealing the car. I keep saying, like, shit, man. And it reminds me of, like it reminds me of my father trying to impersonate what Wayne's World sounds like to him, which is wrong and weird and weird, just not good or funny. And, like, that's what that whole intro sequence was like. And it was hard to focus on the fact that they were maybe doing something wrong.
Yeah, the script was pretty... Yeah, I hate a script where it sounds like what people think... Like, a script in which people don't actually talk that way.
Yeah.
Like, a successful screenplay is one that, like, you can, like, actually mimics the way that people actually engage with each other. This was, like, what a 30-year-old guy thought that teenage brothers should sound like, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it was so, it became, it was just so cheesy. The first line that I wrote down in my notes was, from that character, he goes, hey, chill out, dude, man, it's party time.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that sounds like a Ninja Turtles quote or something.
Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of Ninja Turtle-y things.
Right. And it's the character who says that too is Louie, and Louie is just a pure chaos. He's an anarchist in the truest form, and I kind of love him because nothing matters to him. There's no boundaries.
But that's I think that speaks to my earlier point, which is, like, this person does not exist in the world.
No.
He's not a real human.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to take the movie seriously because they're all just, like, hyper characters of a pretty dull storyline, which is, like, two brothers competing.
It's a little bit of a long storyline. You know, like, it could be...
Right.
This could be shorter significantly. And I think...
Yeah.
I don't know. I just think that it was took a long time to get to the point because I kept pausing to be like, all right, how much time's left on this
movie? Right. I know, but you know what I have to say this movie did for the first time in all of our movies that we've watched so far is that he's, like, not a sex symbol. He's, like, not confident with women. He, like, kind of has a crush on a girl, but, you know, he's not confident in it. He's not, like, playing a sexy person.
No, but here's the thing. You know? He is so tan. He's got such an even tan. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's just...
For a track star, like, you'd think he'd have a little bit of a farmer's.
Yeah, or just, like, a normal human. Like, I mean, he's very skinny. He's kind of twinky. But, yeah, he looks great, but he's not, like, beaming, like, dripping with sex like he was in Thelma and Louise. Still not over that.
Right. Like, I know. I think we talk about
just
that.
Just to point out, we're not Brad Pitt fans. This is just purely analytical, but I'm still not over Thelma and Louise.
Yeah. Yeah, okay, so I don't really have much more to say about Across the Tracks. Stanford from Sex and the City was in it. That was a fun little cameo before he was famous.
Who's that?
The gay guy from Sex and the City, Charlotte's best friend. No, Carrie's best friend. Stanford Blatch.
Don't know him. Never heard of her.
You didn't watch Sex
and the City? No, I realized recently I've... never actually seen a full episode of Sex and the City.
Holy shit, Mike. Well, that's exciting because you can watch the entire series on HBO Go, and you should.
Should I? Just because I can doesn't necessarily mean I'm going to.
No, it's so great. It's
if you're fantastic. Thinking of the same person I am. Oh, you are.
Stanford Blatch.
You are.
Yeah.
Okay, I wrote in my notes too. He's actually, he plays Evan in Freaky Friday.
Oh my God. You funny
remember
boy.
That?
Yeah.
Probably way too cool for Freaky Friday when that came out.
No, I loved Freaky Friday with Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, that movie was my jam.
Yeah.
That was when I decided that I was a punk rocker at heart.
That Lindsay is Lohan so funny. Where did Lindsay Lohan go? I miss her.
I miss her too. Last I heard she had, I don't know.
She was like running a club in Greece or something. I wonder if she's ever had a run in with Brad Pitt.
Great question.
Maybe we could find a way to get her on this podcast.
She can't be that busy.
No.
Another note I had about Louis though, maybe he's gay. He's like kind of obsessed with Billy. Did you notice how like they were all over each other?
He was obsessed with Billy and then he wouldn't let him go.
Yeah, when they were at the mall, he was like, come on, buddy, and like had his hands all over him. He's like, just stay out with me. And I was like, Jesus Christ.
Well, maybe that's why he was so like bad, because he was like repressed. He was acting out.
Yeah, maybe that's why Louis has these crazy like unhinged like lifestyle with no concept of order or like I just feel like chaos whenever he's on screen.
Right. I think it's because he really he's so suppressed and he like hates himself. And so I wish if this movie had come out now, Louis would be in a world in which he could come out
nominated for best supporting, because that was a very understated role.
There was very another smartly,
subtly played angry gay man.
There was a moment when Brad Pitt and Louis are talking, and I wrote this down too. It's a great line. Mm-hmm. And it was right before he was like trying to get him to sell drugs. And he goes, the only thing personal about you, man, is the size of your dick. I'm like, what the hell does that even mean? Is that an insult? He said it in an insulting tone.
Yeah. And then but it's another Teenage Mutant
Ninja Total.
Total?
Totals.
Ninja Total.
I like Totals.
I would be offended if someone said that to me, but I also wouldn't know what it means.
Exactly. Because that's not how human beings talk, which is my major problem with this film, is that like people don't actually talk the way he writes them. That being said, we did speak to Sandy Tung, the director. He wrote the script. He has an older brother. They were both track stars. So it was loosely based on his life with a little drug addiction.
Sprinkled in.
And he said, if you guys are interested in watching the movie, he's going to re-release it soon.
Yeah, they're remastering and they're transcribing is the word, making it HD. They're making it more HD because it was shot on film. So they're doing more HD stuff to it to make it look nicer. And then they're going to re-release it. And it's also available on Amazon Prime currently, but like, they're going to make it look nicer.
So keep an eye out for that.
Another note that I had was that it's a little weird that – not weird, but like you know how you were saying Brad Pitt's not as sexy in this one? Like he doesn't have that sex appeal.
Yeah.
They did make him always sleep with his shirt off though, which wasn't like particularly sexy. It was just kind of weird that he's always sleeping in the room with his brother with no blankets on and like in just his underwear.
Yeah, you know? Well, every movie we've seen, I think except for Too Young to Die, has him topless so far. Johnny Suede. Yeah,
love that you say topless too. It makes it sound way more promiscuous.
He's like walking around his apartment in Johnny Suede in his underpants, like not necessary.
So not necessary. And his underpants had a hole in it.
I know. We already discussed this in the episode.
Was necessary. Yeah, I know. But, you know, my brain keeps going back to that.
Not Brad Pitt fans.
Not a Brad Pitt fan. Just a big fan of that.
You want to rate the movie?
No, because I have one more thing I want to say. Okay. I found this random interview where Brad Pitt did not name names, mm-hmm. but he said hold on. I want to read the exact quote. Okay. He was talking about doing character work or whatever. And this was in 1991. He said this quote. And here's the quote, and you know, make of it what you will, but just try to think of how many movies has he been in where he's had a mom. Anyway, so I think it might be about Too Young to Die. Or,
Julia Lewis?
No. I think it might be about this movie. He says, so you're not crazy about, character work, are you? And he says, well, you could do all this stuff, but it'll just end up in the toilet. I had this crazy woman play my mom in a movie once. One night, she wanted to go out for a walk and do some kind of character exercise. She wanted to be the mom, and she wanted me to be the kid, you know? So I figured I'd give it a shot. So we start out on this walk, and she starts going, "So how's little Betty? Have you been wearing a condom?" And I had to walk around for 3 hours with this lady. Biggest waste of time in my life. I don't know how many movies he's had moms in at this point. So, like, there's only a handful. It could – he didn't name names, which is very classy of him. But she seemed a little like she was a crazy person.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe she was a really great actress. I mean, she was raising two boys on her own.
She was really wanting to get into it, and she was concerned about wearing a condom. I don't know. It's just so fucking weird to do that when you're not – it's not part of the movie or part of the character. You're just like, oh, I just added that in. That's a weird thing to add in.
Well, she's like, I want to role play with you because you're so good looking. Maybe it was like a fetish for her.
Yeah, Brad Pitt and moms – Brad Pitt's moms – Yeah. Anyway.
I like having Brad Pitt quotes, though. I think we need more of those in general over the podcast.
I know. Well, he's not a very chatty person when it comes to...
He's not a man of many words, that BP.
No, he's not. He's what this same interview calls the lockjaw generation of actors, where they don't talk a lot about like their personal life because he doesn't want to distract from his acting.
And you know what? It's so funny because he is definitely one of those, but he also has the most famous relationships in Hollywood. It adds to that Hollywood. That's like
it's
part of the reason.
Of that.
Exactly. It's because that's like part of that, which we talk about all the time, which is like the old Hollywood style movie star. That is such a trait for them.
Yeah.
It's like who you're dating, but that's pretty much it.
There's not a ton of people who do that anymore.
Yeah. We're not really familiar with Brad Pitt's personality yet. We've only been talking about his movies.
Oh, we know like where he's from and like his parents' names and stuff, but we don't know like his personality, like his opinions on stuff. Like now, like it's 2018 and we know that he's vegan and that he does pottery. But like, I don't know. That's like not something that we would know back then.
There was a really great, I think it was Vogue or maybe it was Arch Digest, where they did a tour of his house. In the Hollywood Hills.
Yeah.
That he's lived in since this era. He's always kept it through all of his marriages.
Really?
Yeah. So let's pull some more quotes in general.
Okay, I'll get on.
Let's try to glean who this man really is at his core. We can add it to Pitt's Bits.
Pitt's Bits. Gotcha. Copy that. Okay. All right. Do you want to rate this B?
Yeah, I give it 2 stars.
Whoa.
Yeah, I mean... Listen, it's hard to rate a movie like this because it's kind of, for me, it was like neither here nor there. It's lost in the sands of my memory already, and it's been a week. I know that's mean.
No, it's harsh but true.
I
think I'll give it a 2 stars too. Because here's the thing. You have Brad Pitt in the movie, and it's not memorable.
I know,
that's like a pretty big crime.
Well, that was what was in one interesting thing that Sandy Tung did say. I was like, how amazing is it to be the person who picked Brad Pitt out of a crowd before he was famous and was like, that's the one that I want to be in my movie along with an already, you know?
It's
that's
true.
Very cool.
It is very cool. Him. It is very cool for him. But, I mean, and not to knock Sandy Tung's casting skills, but how many indie movies have cast someone who they think is like the one and then they're not and the movie flops and it's forgotten and no one ever watches it again? Like, at some point, one of those movies was going to cast a Brad Pitt.
That happened to be Brad Pitt. And the other interesting thing is, too, that Sandy told us, is that the casting director for Across the Tracks was also the casting director for Johnny Suede, and she's the reason why Brad Pitt was in Johnny Suede.
Yeah.
So she really did, like, jumpstart his career.
So
she did
has,
his first two movies.
Yeah, she deserves more credit. Well, that's harsh because Sandy Tung had a lot to do with it, and I'm not going to sell the guy short. But
and they remained friends.
And they remained friends. Sandy Tung was his guest to the premiere of Johnny Suede, I think it was.
Yeah, Johnny
Suede. Or no, Thelma and Louise. I think it was Thelma and Louise.
Oh, yeah, it was Thelma and Louise. That's
fucking
cool.
Guest. That's a big thing. Like, like Brad Pitt really trusted him so and respected him.
We also discussed with Sandy... because we'd heard that Brad Pitt has really great working relationships with his directors and he works very closely and seriously with them. And Sandy was like, yeah, he's, he, he brought his own thing to the role, but we really worked close together. So it was nice to have that confirmation.
Yeah.
He did mention casually that he had heard rumors that Brad Pitt was not easy to work with after he became famous. So I want to get down to the bottom of that.
Yeah, that's what I wanted more information on. But Sandy was, he was very respectful of Brad Pitt. Very diplomatic. And he was like, I'm not going to talk about that, which I get.
Yeah. So the movie's a two. His hair was great. Preppy, white boy hair, pretty middle of the road.
Yeah, I was just thinking I'm just going to give it a four because it's good, not great.
It's fine.
Yeah.
I might even go so far as to give it a three, only because there's so much more hair to come, and I know that he can do better.
Yeah, actually, I could get behind that, too. All right, so it's I agree with you on the two and on the three for the hair.
Yeah.
What about his acting? Performance?
Yeah, his performance. So it's almost like watching a painter early in their career, and they're like, right now they're like super hyper realistic painters, but they start learning with watercolors and those watercolors aren't so great. I feel like he definitely gave it his all, and you can see him acting.
Yeah, and I didn't love that.
Which makes it hard because you don't want to know that someone's acting. That might have to do with the script too. But
yeah,
I would say he didn't do a very good job. He definitely gave it his all. For effort.
Yeah.
I'd say three for acting.
Yeah, I give it a four because it seemed like he was trying to trust what the director was telling him.
Mm-hmm.
And it just wasn't playing out on camera. Like, he was really trying hard and he was trusting what the director said. And it's not, I don't think it was entirely his fault that it played off so boring. You know what I mean? Right. I think that had a lot to do with just the way it was edited and the director and all that stuff. And it was just the script. It was kind of choppy. But all in all, I think he didn't do a horrible job. It just wasn't memorable.
Right. Totally. And it was his first, because if we look back at the time frame again, it is his first lead role in any movie he's ever done. So that's there's a lot of pressure on that. You know what? I might up my score.
Okay.
Just because, because of that A for effort. He can have a four.
A for effort.
Yeah.
D for everything else.
And thus concludes Across the Tracks.
And there it is. It's Across the Tracks.
Tune in next week for Cool World.
Cool World is the movie where Brad Pitt wants to fuck cartoons.
I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, can't wait to get into that one. All right, that's all. Bye-bye.
See ya.
Wow, we couldn't sound more bored with that.
DTYL.
DTYL, all right. Too long, didn't read. Here's 4 minutes of us getting shit. Yeah. Okay, everybody, there it is, episode 3. Thank you so much for listening. Please subscribe. And at This Is The Pits Pod on Instagram. And I would love if you guys would give us feedback on what you thought of the movie and what you thought of our takes on the movie. Yep. And hot tea. Spill the tea. Yeah. Half porn, maybe? No. Yes, tune in next week, episode 4, Cool World. Thanks for listening. Bye.